Welcome. Glad you guys are here. I want to start us off in prayer tonight. So let me do that as you guys are finding your seats. God, thank you so much for this incredible opportunity that we have to spend some time together, to connect with one another, to connect more deeply with you. God, tonight we pray that you would help us to be more like Jesus in the way that we act on a daily basis. That's why we come, to be more like you. It's in your name we pray. Amen. All right, well, we are finishing up our series that I've been kind of loosely calling Reach or Witness over the last couple of weeks. If you have been with us over the last month, 4 weeks ago, Pastor Roy started us off, or 4 Wednesdays ago, Pastor Roy started us off. We talked about the idea of testimony. We're going to return briefly to that tonight. Then 3 Wednesdays ago, we went out and gave soda out to hundreds of people, inviting them to church. And then last week, we spent some time just walking through the city, asking God, what is it that you're doing in our city? Just trying to be attentive to the work of the Spirit as it happened around us. And then tonight, we are finishing up the series, coming back to the idea of your witness. One of the things I think is going to be fascinating, I asked Pastor Roy and myself to teach on a very similar topic, because I wanted you to get two points of view on what I think is an incredibly, incredibly important topic. So I'm sure there's going to be some things we say that are the same, some things that we say that are a little different, some things that we'll say that are the same idea and we just say it in a different way. So I'm looking forward to that. I actually have not gone back and listened to his. After tonight, I'm going to go back and listen to what he said, and I'm excited to hear it. So I'm very much looking forward to that. But before we jump into anything, I want to tell you a story, because I love stories. So I was thinking back to the first time I thought that the idea of testimony applied to me as a person, as a follower of Jesus. You see, for about half of my life, I didn't think I was a person of any influence whatsoever. I didn't think that I was that anybody had any interest in listening to anything that I said. I am the most quiet person in my family. I grew up in a really loud Italian family where you had to fight for anybody to listen to you in any way because everybody else was already talking. And so I always felt like I was sort of at the bottom of the heap and didn't feel like I had a lot to say and didn't really feel like I was much of an influence. And I was the youngest. I have 4 older sisters, and I'm the only boy. And so I am what I am. Found myself really just feeling like I was not a person of very much influence. So I kind of spent a lot of my life just trying to keep my head down, not cause trouble, and get through the day. And then I got my first over-the-table job, and it was at Pizza Hut. And so I remember this one Friday night, I was at Pizza Hut, and there were so many things happening, like Pizza Hut, where you're making pizzas, there's this like little printer that just prints out the orders, and I remember that it had gone down so low, some organizational genius had decided that the tub of sauce needed to be directly under the printer. This is good planning, because it was the number of pizzas coming out of the printer were so many that it had made its way all the way down to the printer, and we were just desperately trying to, like, we didn't even have time to tear them off, forget about making them. So all of that was happening, but I was cutting pizza, and I was just trying to cut it as fast as I could. We had an incredibly full dining room. We had 3 delivery guys on. We had dozens of people waiting for their pickup orders. We were slammed, and we were trying to get everything done. And in the middle of all of this, one of the waitresses comes up to me, and she's like, "What's with you anyway?" And I thought to myself, I have no idea what that means, but I'm a little afraid that it has to do with the pizza that I dropped and then boxed about 10 minutes ago, because I probably shouldn't have done that. But I just kept my mouth shut and said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "You know, when things get crazy in here, everybody gets kind of obnoxious and rude and starts swearing at each other." And she said, "You know, I have never heard you swear ever. And you are always really nice to everybody." I said, thanks. And then she said, so what's with you? And I said, well, I don't know. I guess somebody's just been really nice to me. And when somebody's nice to you, it's easy to pass it along. And that was really the entire story. And of course, I was talking about Jesus, but I wasn't interested in making a big deal about it. But that was the first moment I realized, because she then went on to ask me a question like 2 days later. She said, so who was nice to you? I said, oh, I can answer that. It's God. He's been really nice to me, and I don't feel like I deserve it. And that was it. I didn't go into a long answer. I didn't, you know, and I don't honestly remember where it went from that. But that was the first moment I realized somebody is watching me. Somebody's listening to me. Somebody cares what I think. Somebody notices me. And it's for the better. And I thought that was really cool, because I'd never dreamt of that in my entire life. And so tonight, I want to talk about this idea of your testimony, your story, because your story matters more than just about anything else you can tell anybody. All right, let's jump on in. I want to tell you now, I want to read to you a story of someone's testimony, and I think it's fascinating. This is one of the very first testimonies about the power of Jesus, so it's kind of a fun place to start. This was, so Jesus rose from the dead on a Sunday morning, and this was about 4.5 minutes later that this story happened. It happened to a woman named Mary Magdalene. She went to the tomb where Jesus was supposedly buried. She thought he was still buried there. She couldn't find his body, thought his body had been stolen, and she was quite upset. And here is the story of what happens to Mary. I want you to listen carefully to the story of what happens to Mary, and then to how she tells the story about what happened to her, because they are profoundly different. Not that one is inaccurate, but it's just amazing how she tells the story. So listen to this. Here's the story of what happened. Mary was standing outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she stooped and looked in. She saw two white-robed angels, one sitting at the head and the other at the foot of the place where the body of Jesus had been lying. Dear woman, why are you crying? The angels asked her. Because they have taken away my Lord, she replied, and I don't know where they put him. She turned to leave and saw someone standing there. It was Jesus, but she didn't recognize him. Dear woman, why are you crying? Jesus asked her. Who are you looking for? She thought he was the gardener. Sir, she said, if you have taken him away, tell me where you put him and I'll go get him. Mary, Jesus said. And she turned to him and cried out, Rabboni, which means teacher. Don't cling to me, Jesus said, for I haven't yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and tell them I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. That's the story. Now here's how Mary tells the story. Mary found the disciples and told them, I've seen the Lord. Then she gave him his message. That was it. That was the whole story. Hey, I've seen the Lord. That was it. Now, if you saw angels, would that make it into your story? I got to be honest, most of the time I would expect it to make it into mine. If you were having like an emotional train wreck of a day, would it make it into your story? I got to be honest, it would make it into mine. None of that makes it into her story. There was one thing that mattered and one thing only, and she told it as fast and as simply as she could. She stripped the story down to what she considered the single most important detail, and that is, I've seen the Lord, and it changed things for me. I've seen the Lord. I want to talk about the idea of testimony tonight. That was her testimony. I've seen the Lord. And in every way, for all of us, our stories come back to that one central truth. I've seen the Lord. The idea of a testimony is that you are giving witness to something that happened in your life. So, for example, I have been working on this giant project in my front yard, and my contractor has disappeared, and I may have to take him to small claims court. Not awesome, but whatever, doesn't really matter. So I don't want to wait and to finish the project until all of that gets settled, because my front yard looks awful right now and it's an embarrassment, and I'm like lowering my neighbor's like property value. I mean, it's bad. And so I was working on Saturday on it, and before I went out and worked on it, I knocked on my neighbor's door and I said, hey John, his name's John, and I said, hey John, I just need you to take note of the fact that a whole bunch of work is getting done in my front yard and it's me doing it. because someday I may need a witness that the guy didn't do the job he was supposed to do. And if it's done, he could say, well, I did it. Unless I have somebody who can say, I did it. And I need you to be that guy. And John, who knows the whole story because we talked about it a little bit, he said, no, absolutely. I am watching you, and I am happy to tell the truth about what happened. Because it's raining, and you're out there, and it's gross, and you're stuck doing the job you paid somebody else to do. That's awesome. But yes, you need a testimony. I've got it. That's a testimony, right? If I have to invite him to come with me to court to say that I did part of the work, that's a testimony. He's just telling what he saw, what he experienced. A testimony in the spiritual sense is telling the truth about who God is and how it has been proved in your life. A lot of times we think about the big kind of general overview. How many of you were at baptism on Sunday? Isn't that awesome? Anybody get baptized that's here right now on Sunday? Let's give them a round of applause. I'm so proud of them. And if you are available, mark this on your calendar. Saturday, September 1st, 2 p.m. Saturday, September 1st, 2 p.m. We now have two more people who just couldn't make it, who said, I still want to get baptized. I just couldn't make it. And I want to invite you guys to come on out and support them as they are getting baptized, because I'm pretty excited about that. Last year, there was one person who said, Pastor Joshua, I want to get baptized, but I can't make that date. I said, all right, we'll figure it out. This year, it's two people. Next year, I want it to be like four. 3-4 years from now, I want to be having to like do baptisms every month. I don't know how we're going to do that, because it's going to be in the winter, and it's the ocean. But I tell people every time, if you'll go in, I'll go in. So maybe I'll just freeze to death. That'll be okay. I'll do that for baptism. It is worth it. But if you went to baptism or if you've been baptized, every time we do baptism, I tell people that they are going to be telling their testimony. And when I tell people this, they all go, and then they all tell their testimony. And it's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. And they all ask me, am I doing it right? And I said, well, did you download it from the internet? And they say, no. I said, then you did it right. I actually said that to you, didn't I? That's right. And so their testimony is kind of a generic, here's my story testimony. And it's kind of a big picture. Here was my life before Jesus, and then Jesus happened, and here's my life after Jesus. And that is a great and powerful testimony. But I love giving people opportunities to share that story. That story, however, is often not the story that you're going to have the opportunity to tell in your everyday life, right? Like, this is not, it just doesn't come up in conversation very naturally. You know, like somebody's like, you know, my car got flooded the other day. Can I tell you the difference Jesus made in my life? Or, man, have you tried that new restaurant out in Peabody? It's amazing. Can I tell you how Jesus rescued me from sin? It's also amazing. Right? Like, this is awkward. This is, some of you caught that last use of amazing and appreciated, and I appreciate you for noticing that. That's great. But, that doesn't always jump into the conversation very well, but that doesn't mean that the idea of testimony doesn't fit into the conversation very well. We start off with this generic idea of testimony that is powerful and important, but not always conversationally relevant. And what I mean by that, of course, is that before Jesus and after Jesus, big picture story. But there's more to testimony than that. And frequently, what we need to be paying attention to is the relevant part of our story to the conversation at hand. The relevant part of our Jesus story and how it fits into the conversation at hand. Here's what I mean. I'm going to give you kind of three steps in this. But first, I want to make sure we hit why your story is so important. Like 15 reasons, I'm going to give you 3 or 4. Your story is incredibly important because everybody you know is sick of getting advice. Every single person you know is sick of getting advice. So if you tell them you ought to, they completely tune you out before you keep going. They don't need advice because they've gotten 56 pieces of advice. And I'll let you in on a little secret. If they're not sick of advice and they're asking you for advice, the only reason they're asking you for advice is because they want the advice you give to match what they already want to do. And if it does, they will take your advice. And if it doesn't, they will ignore you and move on to the next person and get that person's advice. That is the only time anybody wants advice. Not really, but really. You know it's true, right? So advice is kind of powerless. Advice doesn't convince anybody to take an action they didn't already want to take. A story, on the other hand, and you know why? Why does advice not work? Because we get defensive, right? I don't want to do that. That's going to be hard. That's going to change me. It's going to make me do whatever I don't want to do. It's going to be complicated. The minute somebody gives me advice, I can think of 15 reasons it's not going to work. The minute somebody gives me advice, I'm thinking about all the problems I'm going to have with that. But the minute you tell me your story, none of that happens in my mind. This is why stories are so powerful. I don't get defensive when you tell your story, because you're not telling me I can't go live your story, and you know that, and I know that. It lowers our defenses when we tell a story. It lowers the other person's defenses when we tell a story. That's powerful. It's also powerful because it feels relevant. It feels relevant. If you've had an experience like my experience, and you tell me what Jesus did in your life in that experience, and then you have the gall to not tell me I ought to do something about it. You're just like, here's what happened to me. And they're like waiting, right? That's the moment the person's waiting. So you ought to do what I did. So you don't ever say that. A testimony does not end with you oughta. It's just telling, this is what happened to me. Then you can even ask, so what do you think you're going to do? Like, throw the conversational ball back to them. You don't need to fix their problems for them. It gives the person so much freedom to kind of sit with the story and wonder if it might be meaningful. Stories are incredibly powerful. So how do we connect stories about Jesus and what has happened in our life to everyday conversation? Because I think that for most of us, this is challenging, especially if we pay attention too hard. Sometimes it like slips out automatically, like naturally, and that's great. And then the rest of the time when we're trying to make it happen, it freezes up. So I want to encourage you to do three things. Number one, I want you to listen to stories. Just listen to people's stories. Whatever they're talking about, the first most powerful thing you can do to have a spiritual conversation with somebody is shut up. Just listen a lot. Listen a lot. Now, sometimes the conversation, do you have certain people in your life that you talk a lot, but you don't actually talk about anything? Have those people in your life? And sometimes you even wonder, like, how do I want it to go deeper, but I'm not super sure how to go, because I'm not really sure. I will tell you, there's only one way I have discovered that some people don't go deep. Some people, like, the minute you have a serious conversation, they have no interest. They're done. And that's okay. Right? We're not trying to force people to be who they aren't. If somebody wants to stay surfacey, it's fine. Whatever. But one invitation we can offer is that we can create vulnerability by being vulnerable. Create vulnerability by being vulnerable. Tell something. Now, if you are trying to get somebody to go deep, do not tell them all the worst things that have happened to you in your entire life, like, and how, like, everything bad, all in, like, the first 5 minutes. That will not invite them to go be vulnerable. That will shell shock them, and they will run away. And we've all done this, or at least I've done this. I don't know if you've done that, but I've done this. But a little bit of vulnerability on our side invites a little bit of vulnerability on their side. A little bit of vulnerability on our side invites a little bit of vulnerability on their side. And so we can open up the conversation. And then we capitalize on that vulnerability just by listening. Just listen. Listen a lot. Listen a lot. And sometimes, and I talked about this several months ago, my favorite question is, what else? Whenever the conversation peters out and you're not sure what else to say, just throw out what else. It works almost every single time. What else? And they will start talking again. Because it is not the only, they thought you were going to ruin the moment, and then you didn't, and it turns out you're a safe person to talk to, and they have more to unload, I promise. Every person in America has more to unload. So so you just need to create a safe spot. And so they talk. Or you can ask questions based on your reactions. There is nothing wrong when somebody tells you a story for you to say, you know, if that happened to me, I would feel blah, blah, blah. If that happened to me, I would want to blah, 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 blah. And then ending with, is that how you feel? Is that what you want to do? Now, notice I'm not telling them that they probably feel, you must feel awful. I hate when people say things like that. How do you know how I feel? I have not told you yet. I can tell because you interrupted me. So this is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying you should say to people, man, you must be so upset. You must be so frustrated. No. Just hear how different it is to say, you know, if I were you, I'd be so frustrated. Is that how you feel? See how different that is? That's really different. I had this happen today, actually. A buddy of mine that I've told lots of stories about, but I about a year ago, I told you a story that he had given up a job and took about a 75% pay cut to work for this little Christian organization. It literally, if they paid him one penny less, his family would not have been able to survive. Like, it was the maximum pay cut he could possibly take. And he called me today, or texted me today, said, hey, I need to talk. I called him back, said, what's up? He said, they're closing the organization. I just lost my job. Less than a year ago, I gave up my job that paid way more than I needed. And today, I don't have a job. Can I tell you I can't fix that situation? I can't tell him what he ought to do. But some little voice inside my head would say, man, you better come up with something really smart to say right now. I mean, you are the pastor. You have given him great advice in the past. You are a wise man of God. This is the moment. Say something. So you know what I said? How you feeling? How you feeling? I just talked for a couple minutes. I said, oh, man. I said, you must have a lot of questions, huh? What are all the questions you've got right now? Just throw them all at me. Threw me up. 15 minutes of questions. I said, oh, man, I got to go in 2 minutes because I have a meeting. I said, okay, I got to go too. And we almost literally ended the question then and there, the conversation then and there, 2 minutes. Fortunately, I had that out because I really did have a meeting. But I'll tell you, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I have no idea what to say. But, you know, he called me because he knew I wouldn't say anything. That was the point. He knows I'm not going to say something stupid. You know what? You'll be okay. God will get you through this. He's like, yeah, I know that. What I would like right now is to know how God is going to get me through this. It's not a question of is God faithful. It's a question of what do I do? Like legit, do I try to get my old job back? Because I could. So my point is, number one there, just listen. You just listen to stories. But then, so that's number one, listen to stories. Number two, live out great stories. You want to have something to share when somebody's going through it. You want to have something to share when somebody shares vulnerably with you. Then you need to be adamantly pursuing growth in your life. You need to be ready to take some risks in your relationship with Jesus. You need to be intentionally sacrificing in your relationship with Jesus. Because risk and sacrifice make room for God to move. This is a true thing. Risk and sacrifice make room for God to move. If you want God to move in your life, you need to be ready to risk and ready to sacrifice. If you want to have a story about something awesome God did in your life to tell somebody else, you need to make room in your life for God to do something awesome, which is really scary. It's why we've sandwiched three series together here. I don't know if you've caught this, if you've been with us the last couple of months. We went through an entire series on risk, and now we're doing this series on witness, and we are going to up the ante in September with a series on sacrifice. This is what we're talking about. Risk and witness and sacrifice. Why? It's not because I want you guys to feel like, man, I'm not risking enough. Oh, I just don't sacrifice enough. It's not like that at all. It's because I am convinced that if we choose to be a church that is always risking and always sacrificing and then risking some more when the other risks get comfortable and then sacrificing some more when those sacrifices get comfortable, I am convinced that we will make so much room for God to move that we will have thousands of stories to share with the world about how great God is and how kind he is and how much he has loved us when we thought we were not lovable and how he fixed things we couldn't see how he could fix. And I think that is incredibly exciting. I think that's the life we want to live. I don't think we want to live safe lives. I don't think we want to be bored. Anybody get up today and think, man, I just hope I'm bored today. Right? Man, I love bored. Right? Like, nobody's thinking that. And risk and sacrifice, making room for the power of God, are the only long-term antidote to a boring life that we have, right? Because our culture has other escapes for boredom, like Netflix and pot and all sorts of other stuff. Because everybody is so bored. They're bored because they're comfortable. We're bored when we're comfortable. You want to not be bored, get less comfortable. Start risking, start sacrificing, watch what God will do. Because the danger of risking and sacrificing is not that God will not show up, it's that he will. Because then risk and sacrifice can become a little addictive. When you find out that God does something amazing when you risk and sacrifice, suddenly you're looking for the next risk. It's amazing, my buddy who lost 3/4 of an income to do a job that just fired him. Did I mention, by the way, his wife worked there? Fired them both. You know what he didn't say to me? What a mistake I made a year ago. He said to me, you know, I don't think God is done with me. I mean, yeah, I could go get my old job back, and maybe I will, but I feel like there's something else. Maybe this was, he actually said this to me. He said, I called my wife, I told her we were losing our jobs, and she said, oh, maybe this is the moment we're supposed to move to Africa for Jesus. She's like, we got nothing else to do here. And they talked about it like 3 months ago. They're like, man, if some opportunity ever comes up, there's this cool organization. We would love to work with them. So did you see what happened? They took a risk. And then at the moment that the rest of the world would say, man, that's where it just didn't pan out. They're thinking to themselves, man, maybe we just need to take a bigger risk. Because that panned out okay. We like what that did for our family. We like what that did for our faith. We like what that did for our relationship with Jesus. We feel alive. So you live out stories. You listen to stories and you live out stories worth telling. And then you connect the stories. You ask yourself, when someone's telling their story, you ask yourself, what am I hearing? I am hearing elephants. No, you know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing a group of teenagers. I'm hearing a group of teenagers that I pray will not make the decisions some of us have made because they are starting to follow Jesus when they're 13. And 14, and 15, and 16. And I will tell you, I will listen to as much banging as I have to listen to if that's what they're banging for. I think that's worth it. But back to the point, you listen to stories, you live out stories, and then you try to connect their stories and your stories. What are you hearing? When somebody tells you a story, are you hearing a story about need? Social need, emotional need, physical need, financial need? Are you hearing a story about growth? Need for growth in parenting or character, addiction or whatever? Are you hearing a story about hurt, about past experience or current experience, or fear of future experiences? What are you hearing? And do you have a reasonably similar story in which God came through? Do you have a reasonably similar story in which God came through? I love when people tell me housing problem stories. I love it because I have like 4 stories in my life about how God came through in housing situations. Like this moment where like we've lost a bunch of money to the guy in the front of our yard who we gave too much money to and whatever. Like, this does not worry me because God has bailed me out of so much bigger housing situations. Like, God handed us our whole house on a silver platter and gave us like miraculous amounts of money to fix it. I got to tell you, I'm just not worried. I love when people tell me they're having housing trouble because I have stories about that because God has come through in that area. Whatever the person tells you, do you have a story that is reasonably similar that you can tell? And if you do, and this is important, take your pens out. This is very important. If you're writing down anything, write this down. If you do, tell it briefly. Briefly. They did not come to you and listen to you tell a 25-minute story. Nobody did that. Except for, I mean, you right now to me. But other than that, they didn't do that, right? They came to tell you their story. And you get one sentence. I love this about Mary in the verses that we read. Mary has this whole amazing experience with like angels and an empty tomb and like the rock is moved. And I don't even know how, she wouldn't even know how that happened. And then this guy shows up and she thinks it's a gardener and it turns out to be Jesus. And he is kind to her and all this amazing stuff comes. Like, the best story in her entire life gets squished down to, I saw the Lord. That's all she needed. Why? People listen to short stories. People do not listen to long stories. You want your story to matter, tell it briefly. If you don't have a relevant story, that's okay. Don't tell a story that's not relevant. Right? Just don't. No, but that's like anti-advertising. It is. That's not good. Nobody wants that. If you don't have a story, it's okay. So you go home and pray for him. Or you find a way to risk in that area and let Jesus do a story in your life and then tell him. That's fine too. But then, it's very simple, right? You listen to their story, you live out stories in your own life, and you connect the two in conversation. And I want to just pause on one thing when you miss an opportunity, because people tell me this all the time. They're like, Pastor Joshua, I was in this amazing conversation, and it was a perfect moment for me to tell a thing that Jesus had done in my life, and I totally missed it. I told you guys about a moment I had like this in my own life, like a couple of months ago. That is not a fail. I just want to be very clear. That is not a fail, because you learn how to do something by reflecting on what you have done in the past and evaluating how you can do it better in the future. This is the innate way that God designed you to learn stuff. So if you are in the process of evaluating what you have done in the past in order to do it better in the future, you're not failing, you're learning. Those are just not the same thing. And the moment you stamp learning as failure, you will want to stop learning. The moment you stamp your mistakes as learning, you will be happy to reflect on them, and you will not make them anymore. God designed you to not mind. You are not an awful human being if you make a mistake. It doesn't change your fundamental identity when you make a mistake. When you miss an opportunity, it doesn't make you a loser. It doesn't make you bad at this. It means you are learning. It means that the Holy Spirit was in your heart in that, like a few moments later, whispering to you, hey, let me talk to you about how to do that better. Hey, let me give you a suggestion for next time. That's not like something to be upset or shamed by. That is an exciting moment that you never have to, like, you get, like, you might in your future life, because of that one moment of reflection in your life, you may have 50 moments you get to know what to do if you reflect in that moment. That is very exciting. And it is okay to do something wrong once in order to do it right 50 times. That is a fair trade. So it's never a failure. You're not failing. But I do want to also challenge you to pray. Pray for the people in your life that you have opportunity to share stories with them. And pray for the courage to take the opportunities that are given to you. Very important action step. This is war. There is a real enemy who does not want people to hear stories about how Jesus can set them free. Many of us grew up in cultures, like family cultures, where this was not talked about. I grew up in this is super weird to me. I grew up in a family where everybody went to church. My grandparents went to church. My parents went to church. Everybody went to church. We still, in certain circumstances, did not talk about this. I cannot figure out why. There were certain circumstances where it was okay, when it was just me and my dad all by ourselves, we could talk about this. But like big family moments, absolutely not. Never, ever, under any circumstances. So it left me thinking it was not okay to talk about stuff like this. It makes me anxious when I'm like if I'm in a coffee shop, people incessantly talk to me. I have like a tattoo on my face that says, please talk to me. And so, I could be anywhere, and I will be in line, and somebody will start talking to me. And it took me a really long time to be willing to like share honestly back about who Jesus was and the difference he'd made in my life. It was hard for me because it felt unnatural. And that's okay. I don't mind the fact that it felt unnatural. That was who I was, not who I am anymore. And I knew it was an opportunity to grow. And I had to pray a lot that God would help me grow and have courage and give me opportunities. And then I didn't take them. And then I had to pray that he would give me more courage because at least I saw him and I thought that was an improvement. And then I prayed some more and, over years things changed. It was great. So I want to challenge you, pray for courage and pray for people.